Here, each landscape in microcosm, inviting me to explore. As we traveled, I began to feel an exhilaration, and something more, something deeper, confidence. It felt like it had been forever. I'd spent weeks uncertain of myself as I infiltrated the superiority, trying to act like another person, lying and sneaking. I'd been terrified that my personality faults would cause me to fail the mission and thereby doom my people. It was so satisfying to be able to do something that I was good at. I'd spent a decade exploring the caverns of Detritus and had trained physically for the task. I could tell from the way Chet spoke and acted that he hadn't anticipated my expertise in this, and he seemed to find it thrilling to be guiding someone who could keep up with him. It made me feel wonderful. Like I could accomplish anything. I would walk this path of elders, and I would learn the secrets of the Delvers. I'd bring this information back to my people, and together we would defeat the superiority. I could do it. I really could. I loved that feeling. Spensa, Embot asked, as we moved around the perimeter of the swamp fragment. The footing was more solid here. You appear more alive than I've seen you recently. I'm merely confident, I said, that we can do this. I'm not, he said. It seems like so much. Chet says we'll have to travel all the way inward to follow this path. Pirates, the superiority, the Delvers. It's a lot, Spensa. Focus on what we can accomplish right now, I suggested. For the moment, all we have to do is get across this swamp. Well, that's easy for me, he said. I can fly. See? One step at a time. You can do this. I can do this. Whatever it takes. He nodded by wobbling his drone up and down. Okay, he said. Whatever it takes. My, that feels good. To at least pretend we're in control. I like it. Is this how you feel all the time? I wished that were true. But I didn't contradict him as he zipped out over the swamp, looking down at a mushroom, he shouted, hovering above one growing in the bog. A real mushroom, Spensa! I stopped to watch him buzz back and forth. Being in a drone suited him. There was an energy to his personality that came out as he flew around me in a circle. Chet walked back to join me in watching Embot. I even caught him smiling. He's really not dangerous, I said to Chet. His energy is a little contagious, he admitted. We're almost there. Only two fragments to go. The portal you seek is in some ruins. Ruins? I asked. Like from an old mining operation? No, he said, though we'll pass something like that on the next fragment. The ruins we're hunting are older, perhaps as old as this place. Have you wondered how all of this got here? I asked him. This landscape, these fragments? Indeed, I have. There are legends, naturally. People think hyperjump accidents are behind some of it, or even the Delvers. But lore says that some of this was here before either Delvers or Cytonics. I helped Embot harvest a sample of his mushroom and store it inside his specimen box, which was the cavity in the cleaning drone where it once held the dust it vacuumed up. The little drone hummed happily as we started out again. We reached a larger river, flowing over the side of the swamp fragment. Chet directed us inward instead of trying to ford it. Though the current wasn't swift, he didn't like the idea of potentially being swept off amid uncertain footing. We continued on, leaping from one firm section of ground to another. After a half hour or so of this, Chet halted me by taking my arm. He narrowed his eyes at the next section of land, then shook his head. False land, he explained. See how it ripples? Sinkhole underneath that patch. This way. He led me through some still water, where the stench of the mud was terrible. Soon we reached another long section of dry land. Are there any landscapes you haven't traveled? I asked him, impressed by how easily he guided us. Oh, I'm sure there's something out there that I haven't seen, he said, but I have traveled a great deal. I don't like staying in one place. You lose track of time in here that way. I prefer new sights, new experiences. I only stay with others when I'm out of reality ashes. Once I have a few, I'm off.
After a little more hiking, I spotted our next fragment, the penultimate one before reaching our destination. This one turned out to be another desert, but with vast dunes as tall as buildings. I narrowed my eyes. Didn't sandworms live in dunes like that? Or at least giant scorpions? Before we could cross over, however, Chet perked up. He turned, then pointed. There were more starships in the sky. Chapter 10. Used to this by now, I joined Chet in taking cover beneath a large tree with crooked branches but a decent number of leaves. The tips drooped so low they trailed in the water, making ripples.
Broadsider markings, Chet whispered to me as we peeked through the canopy at the ships. We've entered their territory.
Are the factions that different from one another?
Generally, no, he said. But the Broadsiders have a reputation for being more fair than the others. Then again, their leader is said to have once been in the Superiority Security Forces. I've kept my distance for that reason.
There were four ships in this formation. I didn't recognize the specific designs, but they were definitely military grade. As we watched, they clashed with another group of ships that darted up from beneath the fragment. A quick firefight ensued, the various ships flying like hawks and prey from one of the pictures of old Earth, twisting around one another as they soared down past the fragment. Seeing them fight awakened something in me. I missed flying. It had been only a few days, but already I longed to feel a ship around me, its motion an extension of my body as I soared around obstacles and wove between enemies. Being in the sky, claiming the stars. I missed it, dearly. Soon, I whispered, as the ships vanished from sight, chasing one another beneath the fragments.
We should probably give it a few moments, Chet said, settling on a rock there under the tree, in case they come back this direction.
That was another faction, right? I asked. Cannonade?
Your eyes are keen, he said. Before long, you'll know the proper markings for all six.
Do they often fight one another?
Aggressively, Chet said. It's a pity. They could be out exploring and adventuring. But I suppose I shouldn't begrudge them a little sport. We all have our own ways of passing the time in here.
Well, if we were going to wait this out, it seemed like a good opportunity to arm myself. I'd cursed the loss of my rifle several times already, so I selected a sturdy stick from those fallen around the tree and began stripping it. Once finished, I found a good stone, properly oblong with a narrow portion in the middle. I tried to affix it to the stick, but my first effort failed because the vines I'd picked snapped.
If I may, Miss Nightshade, Chet said, unlacing his left boot.
He pulled out a long shoelace, revealing another one still fastening his boot.
Always double lace your boots while exploring. You'd be surprised how often an extra bit of string comes in handy. The uses are multitudinous.
He showed me how to lash the stone in place, and then, surprised at my lack of knowledge, took out his other extra shoelace and proceeded to give me a short lesson on different knots and hitches. I realized with embarrassment that I'd allowed having a light line to make me complacent in this area. I listened with devoted attention. It felt like such a practical thing to learn, the sort of thing that, well, that I imagined my father might have taught me, if things hadn't gone so poorly. Once we were done, I tucked away the shoelace, he'd told me to keep it to practice with, and picked up my club. I swung it a few times for good measure.
A fine weapon, Chet said, hands on hips. What shall you name it?
Skullbreaker, of course, I said.
Excellent.
Though, I don't know if sandworms have skulls, I said. Maybe we should sharpen a rock and make a spear, in case I get swallowed and need to kill it from the inside.
I doubt that will be requisite, Chet said with a chuckle.
Say that when you're in a sandworm's gullet and I'm standing triumphantly on the corpse of mine, contemplating how to make a hat out of its skin.
Ha, Chet said.
I doubt I've ever met a young woman quite so bloodthirsty.
I shrugged. It's kind of an act. You know, bravado. But I do want to be able to defend myself against any beasts we encounter.
If we must do so, then we have failed,
Chet said. He held up a finger, adopting a straight-backed lecture pose.
No beast attacks a person unless that person has made a mistake. We trespass in their domain. And it is incumbent upon us to take the utmost care to avoid accidents.
You don't hunt? I asked.
Heavens no, Chet said. Not except for sustenance, which is unnecessary in here. I explore to see the wonders of the universe. Why, to leave that wilderness so desecrated? No. An explorer must not be a destroyer. He must be a preserver. But then I'm rambling. We should continue. The pirates appear to have taken their squabbles elsewhere.
We continued on, barely reaching the desert fragment and leaping across before the two drifted too far apart. Embot seemed reluctant to leave his mushroom hunt, but he followed us. Chet's comments about hunting and exploring left me intrigued. It was the opposite of what I'd expected from someone like him. The way he talked felt liberating. Exploring, traveling. He could do that and test his skills without needing to fight or kill. It was a new way of thinking. For me, the struggle to get better had always ultimately ended with the destruction of my enemies, or at least the humiliation of those who had laughed at me. I was changing, though. It had begun on Starsight, as I met so many people who were technically my enemies, but also just ordinary people. I wanted a way out of all of this now, more than I wanted to end the Krell. Was there a way we could stop this war without destroying them, or them destroying us? Chet kept us to the valleys between the dunes. I watched the sand carefully as we walked. Embot hovered out in front of me. Spencer, I had to leave behind some of my information databases, but I kept the fauna surveys for all known worlds in the superiority, and I don't want to be a downer.
No sandworms? I asked. Afraid not.
Scud, I said. What about giant scorpions?
Orion totally killed one of those on old Earth, so they've got to be real. There are several low-gravity planets with arthropod-like creatures that would probably fit that definition.
Ooh,
one has a poison stinger that, if it hits you, you grow fungus on your tongue and in your blood. Basically, it kills you. But mushroom tongues!
Wow, I said, that really exists?
Spencer, Embot said, are you crying?
No, of course not, I said, wiping my eye. It's just, I'm glad something that awesome exists, you know? Like in the stories. Maybe when this is all done, we can visit that place. You think maybe I could train one up from a baby to let me ride it?
Chet chuckled from up ahead, leading us farther into the desert. And I allowed myself to grow excited.
The next fragment would be the one with our destination, my chance, finally, to see what the Delver had sent me to experience. I should have been exhausted, and to an extent, I was. It had been a difficult day of travel. It felt good, though. There was something healthy and satisfying about being this type of worn out. It was odd that I wasn't hungry, and I'd been hiking all this way and was only mildly thirsty, but well, I was walking across a literal flying desert and had passed infinite waterfalls that were fed by no tributary. I doubted lack of hunger would be the oddest thing I experienced in here. I hurried up, joining Chet as we were forced to climb a dune, a difficult process, though he showed me how to do it at an angle and while keeping somewhat solid footing by not walking in his footsteps.
In snow, he explained, step where the person in front of you did. That will save energy. Sand dunes, however, settle, and so the person in front of you will disturb that, which actually makes it harder if you step right where they did.
At the top, I picked out the proper fragment.
That one? I asked. The green one? That's it, Chet said.
There was so much life on these. Plant life, at least. Even the desert had scrub stubbornly breaking from the sand and growing defiantly. Was this what it was like on most worlds? Plants just kind of grew without anyone to cultivate them? Are you nervous? I asked Chet, about what we'll find. He thought for a moment, smoothing his mustache.
I feel like it's inevitable. I knew I'd make my way to the path eventually, to the point that when you mentioned it to me, I felt like I'd been drawn to you, pulled onto this course.
That sounds kind of unnerving, honestly.
My apologies. That was not my intent.
He glanced toward the distant light burst.
Still, I worry about the Delver's hand in this place. I never can quite trust that my will is my own.
Do you know anything about them?
They're not a group mind, Chet said. People get that wrong about them. The Delvers are all separate beings, but they're also identical. They live in a place where nothing ever changes and where time doesn't exist. They exist in one moment, in one place, indistinguishable, and terrified of anything that isn't exactly as they are.
Okay, I said. A lot of that doesn't make sense to me, Chet, but I'll try to pretend otherwise.
Thank you,
he replied.
All I know is that the not making sense part is why individuals like you can hyperjump through the nowhere. Time and space are irrelevant, and after slipping into the nowhere, you can come out anywhere else. I worry, however. Every time we puncture the barrier between the nowhere and the somewhere, we corrupt the nowhere a little. Like how you can't walk through clean, fresh snow without leaving tracks.
Do you think there is snow in here somewhere? I asked. I'd like to see it sometime.
It exists, but is rare, he said. Tell me, Miss Nightshade, did you actually live your entire life on that barren planet? How did you survive?
I shrugged. We have algae vats and artificial light underground. And there is some life. Rats live in the caverns, eating fungi and algae that transfer heat into biological energy. It isn't much, but we make it work.
You sound like an exceptionally courageous group, Chet said. It is my honor to travel with you. Though I must admit, I find your home a strange place to have a society.
Oh, Embot said, flying up beside him.
It is a very strange place, with a fascinating mix of technological advancements and backward ignorance. They have spaceflight, but not automatic soap dispensers, for example. So you could say their culture has its ups and downs.
It indeed sounds interesting, Abomination, Chet said.
Come, Miss Nightshade and companion. We should hurry. There is a point of interest on this fragment I would like to show you before we leave it, but we will need to rush. It wouldn't do to miss the next fragment because we dallied.
We continued on, Chet picking up our pace. A half hour later, we crested another dune, and I got a better glimpse of our target fragment. It was covered with shimmering grass. It looked so soft, like the fur of a good blanket, and idyllic streams that dropped off the side, sparkling like drops of sunlight. It looked like paradise as described in the stories, green, alive. There were even butterflies. However, something felt odd to me. Chet had rushed us to get here in time, but that fragment appeared to be hours away. At the rim, Chet waved me along to the right. The dunes tapered off here, and in a few moments we found what he'd wanted to show me, a pit. The sand had blown away, exposing brown rock, and a vast chunk had been dug out of the fragment, going down at least 30 meters. The sides were tiered, like a reverse pyramid, paths running along them in a spiral. A quarry, I said. For acclivity stone?
Precisely, Chet said. This one is ancient, but I thought you might appreciate seeing an example of a quarry. The ones the Superiority runs farther inward at Sherhold are much more massive affairs, but it's the same general principle.
Too bad they didn't leave any acclivity stone, I said, searching the quarry. Embot zipped past me and went soaring down to look at the bottom. Maybe we could have fashioned some kind of floating device for ourselves. Chet shook his head, smiling. What? I said.
They left plenty of acclivity stone, Miss Nightshade, he said, gesturing. What is it you think we're standing upon?
Rock, I said.
Rock, he said, that floats through the sky. These fragments all have acclivity stone in them.
Unfortunately, it takes refinement and energy to make it work on a scale that's usable. So I doubt we'll be able to make any kind of device. Still, it is all right here.
I blushed at the realization. Of course, the fragments floated on acclivity stone. It made perfect sense now that I thought about it. I guess the blue coloring, like the light glowing underneath Embot's wings, came from the refinement process.
Now, he said, that other fragment.
He gazed across at it, then frowned.
It should be here any moment. By my best guess, Embot said, judging by its slow movement, our fragments won't touch for 10 hours.
10 hours? Chet, why did you hurry us? He scratched at his head.
10 hours, you say?
Yes, Embot said, though I have set my internal chronometer to the time used by Spensa's people, which is patterned after 1 hour Earth time, the same as used by my old ship, and thus also, presumably, by you. Chet settled on a rock.
I apologize, Miss Nightshade. My sense of time is not as reliable as it once was.
I let the conversation die, but I was baffled. How could Chet have such a poor sense of time?
Well, Chet said, perhaps we should get some rest here, then attack the Path of Elders. Always best to hit a task fresh and awake, so that it can't hit back, you see.
I smiled. That reminded me of something Kimmelin would say. But I agreed with getting some rest. It had been a wonderful day, though a long one. As Chet took off his jacket to make a pillow, I checked on my reality icon, finding it had shed 3 motes of silvery dust today. I proffered one to him and watched carefully so I could study the hungry way he eyed my pouch. Everything about traveling with him had been a joy. Everything except that look. I tucked away the pouch quickly. Chet took a little longer to put away his ash, instead staring at it for a time, glowing and twinkling in his palm. So, the Path of Elders, I said to break the odd mood. Is there anything we need to do to prepare for it?
Not that I know of, he said. I visited this first stop one time, but decided not to go into the cavern. I feel embarrassed to admit that after seeing your excitement.
I stared out at the garden fragment. Yeah, it was moving more slowly than Ned did at mess on an early morning shift. It would take a long time to get here. It feels like the quests that happened in the old stories. That's why I'm excited.
You put a lot of stock in those stories.
My grandmother told them to me when I was a child. They kind of just stuck.
I find that admirable, Chet said. But I warn you not to raise your expectations too much. Life isn't always like one of those stories.
I know, I said, still staring over that beautiful field. But stories say something about us and about where we came from. They're a reminder that we have a past, a history, and a future. When I was growing up, Grand-Grand's stories had been my shield against the names I was called, against the things people said about my father, against my own terror that all those things, particularly the ones about me, were true. In the stories, there was a sense of justice. Everything had a purpose. Every little bit meant something. I thought if those heroes and heroines from the stories could keep going forward into the darkness, so could I. I might have clung to them a little too tightly. With how strange everything had been lately, perhaps I was seeking some kind of stability or some kind of guide.
I can understand that, Chet said. It's odd. This place has stolen from me who I was, but I still know things. I know what a burrito is, though I've never eaten one in here. I can list the names of the first human colony worlds. And I remember stories. I partially decided on my name due to the tales of the old hero Chet Cannister.
Oh, those are good, I said. But I like the older ones best, heroes like Odysseus.
Or Hercules.
Yeah, I said, slamming my fist into my other hand.
Or Satan.
Chet blinked.
Excuse me?
Satan? I said. The hero.
The hero.
Yeah, I said. Grand-Grand told me the story. Satan got thrown into a place of fire, but he was like,
Hey, everyone, it doesn't matter so long as we have each other. We can make this place as good as any paradise. Then he volunteered to infiltrate the enemy's world and went on this big quest through the abyss.
Now, my memory, as I've warned you, isn't great, Chet said.
But that sounds like the old poem Paradise Lost. I think you might have misinterpreted it.
What? Who do you think was the hero of that story?
Adam and Eve.
Those losers? They didn't do anything but sit around. Everyone else had flaming swords and dramatic battles.
Chet grinned. Well, that's one way to interpret it. And what do I know? I only know my own name because of the patch I found on my uniform.
I made a pillow out of my jacket. As I did, M'Bot hovered over beside me.
He said.
What?
I asked. I think he might be correct about Paradise Lost.
Read it again, I said. You really expect me to believe that in a story with people named Beelzebub and Moloch who live in Pandemonium, the author wanted us to root for someone named Eve?
Some things are obvious, unless you're a robot, I guess.
Do you want me to do what I did last time? The robot asked me more softly, just in case.
I nodded, then lay back, contemplating the day we'd had. I couldn't remember another day in my recent life that had been so thoroughly enjoyable. That made me feel guilty, though. Jorgen and the others were fighting for their lives, and I was investigating swamps and playing explorer. I would have to stay focused. Tomorrow, we started the Path of Elders, and hopefully I'd finally have some answers. Or at the very least, I'd learn the right questions.
Chapter 11. M'Bot woke me the next morning, and I stretched, finding the garden fragment hovering an easy step from our own. My memories of the night contained only ordinary dreams. I wished I'd been able to find Jorgen and at least deliver a report, but I was so exhausted that my attempt didn't get far. Chet got up when M'Bot tapped him, and at his suggestion, I searched out a nearby spring. I took a drink, one of the last ones I'd need in here, and washed my face and hands. Fortunately, I didn't stink as much as it seemed I should have, considering all the effort of the day before. As I washed, I glanced at M'Bot, who quietly whispered,
"He didn't get up. Slept until I woke both of you."
I nodded, then joined Chet at the edge of the fragment. "Ready?" I asked him.
"Forward," he said.
We stepped across, and I realized this was my first time walking on grass. It felt so strange underfoot, springy, like I was walking on a pillow. This fragment turned out to be relatively small, all green grass and hills with a lake in the center. Near that was a hillside with a hole cut into it, like a doorway into a mine. The tunnels beyond weren't extensive, a little entryway followed by three small rooms with earthen walls. But walking through them, I felt an eerily familiar sensation. Scud. I'd been in places that felt like this before. We found the portal at the rear of the largest room. It was much like the one I'd come out of in the jungle, a glistening surface of rock, slate gray, but carved with lines, hundreds of them this time, in an intricate pattern. M'Bot flew up to the wall, and the lights on his drone lit up the markings. He said.
I kept a database of all known scripts cataloged by the superiority. This appears to be none of them.
I nodded absently, tracing a curving line with my finger. They aren't a language, not really. I think I know what the lines mean, though.
How can you? M'Bot said. You just said the markings aren't a language.
They aren't.
But they mean something.
Yes.
Well then, what?
My finger reached the end of the line. Memory. M'Bot hovered beside me.
Yes, I find this curious. I'm feeling a new emotion. It's like anger and frustration mixed. How interesting.
With that, he hovered up, then came down directly on my head, whacking me.
Ow!
I said, more surprised than in pain. Chet immediately cursed, reaching to grab M'Bot, but I held up a hand to stop him.
M'Bot,
I said. What is wrong with you?
That is what my emotions said I should do, he explained.
Wow, I feel better. Curious. Curious.
You can't just hit people.
Didn't you hit Jorgen basically all the time?
That was different, I said. First, I hated him. Then I liked him. So I had good reasons.
Ah, Embot said. You say things like that and I want to hit you again.
Would you stand still so I can smack you with a grabber arm? That sounds fun.
Abomination, Chet said.
You should.
It's all right, Chet, I said. He's just having trouble dealing with emotions. They're new to him.
I think I'm doing well, all things considered, Embot said to Chet. I bet the first time you had emotions, you babbled a lot and soiled your clothing.
He hovered back around to look at me.
Would you please explain what you meant by telling me this wasn't a language, then immediately interpreting it?
These are the memories of the people who used this portal, Embot, I said, kneeling and feeling at the grooves cut into the stone. It makes a curious kind of sense. Cytonics are like biological means of communication and travel. Hyperjumping replaces starships, and mind-to-mind contact replaces radios. So it feels right to me that there would be a way to store thoughts, a cytonic book or a recording.
Yes, Chet said, kneeling beside me. This is what I've heard. The Path of Elders involves a sequence of these portals, 4 or 5 total from what I've been able to learn. Each is among the most ancient of ways into the nowhere, etched with the experiences of the first cytonics.
Yes, I'd seen these patterns in the tunnels of Detritus. I'd also seen them in a large space station, the shipbuilding facility in orbit around Detritus. And I'd seen them inside the Delver Maze, a place I was increasingly convinced was the corpse of a long-dead Delver. What do we do? I asked. How do we begin?
I'm not certain, Chet said. Admittedly, I thought we'd experience the memories as soon as we entered.
He placed his own hand on the markings.
I can feel something.
So, Embot said, these things are both memories and portals between dimensions? Yes, I said, closing my eyes. The boundary was weaker than usual in this room. My pocket started to grow warm. My father's pin. Time for a test. The somewhere, home, was on the other side of this wall. Could I open the way? I engaged my cytonic senses. With my hands on the wall here, yes, I could feel the somewhere. My reality pulling on me, trying to suck me through. The rock became as if liquid, and I began to sink into it. Strangely, I could again feel a presence near me, like I had when I had used my powers in the jungle, the one that I wanted to believe might be my father. Was it guiding me, leading me to freedom? I stopped with a thump, like the sound your boots made on the floor when you kicked them off at night. I tried again. Thump.
What do you feel? Chet asked me.
The portal is locked on the other side, I said, as you warned.
I hoped I was wrong about that, he said, and that your hyperjumping powers would let you use these portals to access the somewhere. Alas. Fortunately, that is not our primary endeavor here. There has to be a way to see the memories left for us. Can you listen to the rock? Spy on it, as you say you can do to the Delvers?
I tried that, closing my eyes and listening, opening my mind. Yes, there was something here. How did I access it? I asked the rock, pled with it to open to me. But I failed. With a sigh, I opened my eyes to find that the cavern had changed around me. I could make out the vague outlines of the rooms here, but they were ethereal, insubstantial. It was as if that world had faded and another had sprung up in its place. In this one, I felt like I was floating in darkness. I stumbled, trying to get my bearings.
Oh, Embot said. Spensa, you seem to be experiencing motor control problems.
This isn't related to the rap on the head I gave you, is it? Oh, scud. I directly disobeyed my programming mandates by doing harm to—
I'm fine, I said.
I'm seeing something.
Well, you're probably always seeing something, even when your eyes are closed, technically. Or maybe not, because—
Hush, I said, turning around. Chet still knelt beside me, looking about in confusion.
Do you see what I do? I asked.
We're floating in darkness, like when in the light burst.
Indeed, Chet said. Only, look here, beside me.
I knelt, unsteady. I could feel the floor, touch it. Yet it was faint, nearly invisible to my eyes. Near our knees was a small pinprick of whiteness. It was part of the vision.
Is this the light burst?
Chet shook his head, seeming baffled. But as we watched, something changed. A substance began to grow around the pinprick of light, obscuring it, growing like a tiny asteroid, then flattening out and—
A fragment,
I said, watching as stone grew.
We're witnessing the birth of a fragment.
Yes,
Chet said.
I believe you are correct. We are watching it grow over hundreds of years, I suspect. It's as if—
As if matter is seeping through, I said.
That's what this is, Chet. A tiny weakness between the dimensions. The somewhere is leaking in, forming a fragment like a stalactite forms slowly over time in a cavern.
And I knew this was happening over centuries, as Chet had said. That information appeared in my mind because it had been left intentionally to inform me. These thoughts, they were the thoughts of ancient cytonics.
Yes, Chet said. I believe you've done it, Miss Nightshade. This is the past, the path of elders, the secrets of the ancient cytonics.
Scud, it sounded awesome when he said it that way. As we watched, the fragment expanded into a block of stone, perhaps 20 meters wide.
Look,
Chet said, pointing behind me.
Was that there before?
I turned around. I didn't see any other fragments, but I did pick out a faraway white spot. It was the light burst, but it seemed to have appeared as the fragment grew.
It's so small, I said, and there are no other fragments around. This must be the distant, distant past.
I got a sense of this place at the time, a kind of silent tranquility. Nothing dangerous, no feelings of anger, no delvers. The delvers either hadn't existed at that time or had been somewhere else.
How can we see this?
I asked. You said this path was memories of people who entered the nowhere, but presumably nobody was here to see this part.
Time is strange here, Chet said, still kneeling. I imagine that cytonics were able to uncover this somehow. Do you see this here? What do you make of it?
A line had appeared in the ground, the illusory version. It was different from the rest of the fragment, shinier, a different color. As we watched, it grew up into a wall, just a few handbreadths high. But a tiny pattern appeared on it, a little swirl. It felt like some kind of natural occurrence. Like erosion. Yes, that was it. A kind of interdimensional erosion, only created when— A figure appeared in the scene, a Dione with blue skin. I felt the vision abruptly slow. Decades were no longer passing with each second. This was in real time. The Dione stumbled to their feet.
Pre-industrial clothing, Chet guessed, pointing at the furs sewn roughly together.
The Dione gasped and spun around, confused. They smiled, baring their teeth. Wait, no. That wasn't a smile. For Diones, that meant aggression, or maybe fear. The Dione didn't see us, and it felt eerie to have them look through me. They then dropped their knees and started clawing at the tiny wall that indicated the portal, until time seemed to speed up again. We watched the unfortunate Dione as a blur, trying to find a way off the fragment. They aged, then died. Their corpse turned to dust, leaving bones. It happened in seconds.
That poor creature, Chet said, dying alone in this place.
I knelt beside the Dione's bones. The fragment had grown larger, but only a little.
Matter leaks into here from the somewhere. You've said you suspected this, Chet.
Indeed. Perhaps the belt formed because of weakened boundaries.
I scanned the darkness and thought I could pick out another fragment forming in the distance. And the light burst, it was a tiny bit larger. So the fragments grew around small weaknesses between this dimension and ours. The light burst consolidated as a reaction. It became the uncorrupted region of the nowhere, a kind of safe room in a quarantine zone, perhaps?
Yes, Chet said. Yes, that feels correct.
There was another piece, something more to this. If the somewhere is leaking into here, I said, did the nowhere in turn leak into our dimension? What shape would that take? The answer was right before us. Other diones appeared in the vision, coming through the portal, each leaving a tiny addition to the wall, more matter, and another swirl each. These learned to jump in and out, and no more died alone in here.
Zytonics,
Chet whispered.
This is how it happened. The nowhere leaked into our dimension, and it changed people living near the breach. It made us.
It's like interdimensional radiation, I said, that infuses people with the nowhere? I felt a surreal sense of disconnect as, in the near distance, another fragment grew in fast motion. Other people appeared on it eventually, but of a different species, Varvax. The Krell, though they didn't have their exoskeletons, they were little crabs, and I felt the two species connect. Speak mind to mind before they even got close enough to shout at one another. The first two species to ever meet, at least in the nowhere, and long before either had access to space travel. I tried to listen to them, tried to focus my attention, like squinting but with my brain. Cytonic metaphors are weird, but that's what it felt like. I pushed, and something in the memories encouraged me.
Further, it said. Express your talent. Listen.
I linked with it, and my brain interpreted what was being sent. Information, both verbal and nonverbal. When I'd fought the drones on Detritus, I'd interpreted their instructions and responded before I consciously registered what I was hearing. This was the same. My mind, or my soul, or whatever, knew what all this meant. And something clicked. Ah, I thought. So that's how you do it. When I listened in on others with my mind, I did it by pretending I was something I wasn't. I somehow spoofed being the communication's intended recipient. It let me remain shadowy, unseen, a spy. Good, the memory said. Then a soft impression appeared in my mind, a place.
Go here, the vision whispered.
Alongside the words came the image of a fragment with some ruins. Then the vision vanished. I sank to the ground, my back to the portal wall.
It was the hit to your head, Embot said, hovering down beside me. I'm so sorry.
It wasn't that, Embot, I said. I promise.
Oh, thank Turing.
Who?
One of the fathers of computing, he said. It felt appropriate to say.
You did not harm her, Abomination, Chet said. I saw the vision, too.
Did you feel that last part? I asked, like a voice, helping guide me.
I didn't feel anything like that, he said. I saw the first fragments, the first portals, and the first cytonics. Then a hint of the next place to go?
Yeah, I saw that, I said. Another fragment with ruins.
Yes, Chet said. That's a fragment deep inside Broadsider territory, I'm afraid. But I know that we must go there. I feel overwhelmed.
I felt elated.
Yes, elated.
I realized that ever since I discovered my powers, what my people called the defect, I'd been worried they were something nefarious. I'd thought that maybe I was something terrible, a delver in embryo, or something monstrous. But I wasn't. Cytonic powers were just a mutation. Granted, a bizarre one caused by my ancestors being exposed to the nowhere's leakage into the somewhere. But nothing terrible grew within me. I was just, well,
Me.
Saints.
I'd needed to see that. A simple revelation, yes, but it changed everything. I knew what I was. I knew how I had come to be, and it was no wonder that power is manifested in our people. Detritus had one of these portals, perhaps helping activate the latent talent from our bloodlines. This was part of the information the Elder Cytonics had left, the thing they'd wanted me to know.
You are not a monster, the impression lingered. You are one of us. You are wonderful. You are natural. You are loved.
And along with that, a nudge to help me develop further in my talents. A push and some understanding. I had the sense that if my talents had been different, I would have been nudged a different way to develop those abilities instead. I glanced at Chet, who was grinning practically ear to ear.
I feel left out, Embot said. You're both experiencing different emotions from the ones I am, and this is all very confusing. What is one supposed to do with all of these emotions? What are they for? What's the purpose?
I don't think they have any specific purposes, I said.
Of course they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't have evolved in you and then been programmed into me. But I suppose there are things that are evolutionarily neutral, and perhaps saying purpose implies too much volition behind the process. Unless you believe in God, which I'm not sure that I do. I mean, I was created by someone.
I took a few deep breaths, trying to digest what I'd seen. Chet, I said, did you see those Varvax on the nearby fragment?
I did indeed, and I find it curious. The two fragments were relatively near to one another. Diones and Varvax. Well, Embot said, I don't know what exactly you saw, but histories show that those two peoples traveled between worlds cytonically before they did it with starships.
Yeah, I said. The same thing happened to humans and the Kitson, and maybe other species. I never realized the hole in that. A cytonic usually needs a direction to go, instructions to hyperjump, at least very far. But this explains how. They met in the nowhere before hyperjumping between worlds.
Abomination, Chet said. Do you have a record on when the Delvers first appeared in the somewhere?
The initial records of the Delvers occur after the first human war began, Embot said. That was when the Phone Company, a human organization, gave hyperdrives to the people of Earth. Humans then spread throughout the galaxy. War began, and near its end, the first Delvers appeared. Before that time, there were no reports of Delvers, or even the Eyes.
I looked to Chet. He'd sensed it too. No Delvers had existed at the time of this vision. So how had they appeared? What were the Delvers? My contemplations were interrupted as an enormous jolt shook our fragment, accompanied by an overpowering crash. Chapter 12. I grabbed my makeshift club, which I dropped near the front of the cavern, and stumbled out onto the loamy ground. Chet joined me, unsteady on his feet, holding on to the wooden supports at the mouth of the cavern. Another fragment had collided with the one we were on. It looked smaller than ours, but thicker and more dense, like a battleship made of stone.
How did you miss that? I demanded of Chet, pointing across the green field to the place where the two fragments were mashed together.
I have no idea, he said. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before.
The ground shifted again as the battleship fragment shoved farther into ours, causing dirt to roll and stone to crunch. Our fragment was pushed along with it, like an old ship being pushed by a tug, a really aggressive tug with its boosters on overburn. The chaos sent me to my knees. Scud. The entire fragment was shaking terribly. On Detritus, I would have thought 1,000 meteors were striking at once. Chet grabbed me by the arm and helped me to my feet.
How do we get off? I shouted at him over the noise of rock crushing. I don't know, he yelled back. There aren't any nearby fragments.
I struggled for balance, but pointed at the battleship fragment.
There is one other place to go. It's trying right now to destroy us, Chet yelled. I don't know that I consider it an option.
I'm very angry too, Embot shouted from behind me. I thought you should know, since it seems like we're sharing.
Options? I shouted at him.
For being angry? I've always liked raw fury, but indignation has a certain bold flavor too, don't you think?
Embot.
Sorry, he shouted. My databases say the proper behavior during an earthquake is to either get outside, which we've obviously scored good marks on since we're literally outside our own universe, or get to a place where nothing can fall on us. This seems to work. Yay us.
Oh, and I'm not mad any longer.
Wow. Do emotions always pass this quickly?
Well, maybe the collision would subside now that we'd survived the initial impact. I looked up across the grass. The ground continued to tremble, and something else bothered me, something I couldn't immediately define. It was the water, I said, pointing. The lake is empty. What happened to the water?
It must have drained out the bottom, Chet said. The fragments aren't made entirely from acclivity stone. Some have more, others less. I have hypothesized that it influences how fast they move.
The one crashing into us is more solid then? I said. It must have come up quickly if you didn't spot it.
Precisely, Chet said. Our current one looks to be mostly soil, so the bottom of the lake must have given out.
That bothered me. I mean, these fragments were already playing with my brain. I perpetually felt like I was walking across unstable footing. As I scanned the fragment, my fears became manifest. Rifts appeared in the soil. Widening cracks like bolts of lightning moved across the once tranquil prairie. In these lines, the soil and grass vanished, sinking out of sight.
It's breaking apart, I said, forcing myself to keep my feet despite the shaking.
Scrud,
Chet said. Ahead of us, an entire section of the grassland fell away, leaving a gaping hole.
I suggest a hasty actualization of your earlier plan. We must get onto that more solid fragment.
We dashed away from the tunnel with the portal, and it collapsed in a roar behind me. The ground, which had once felt soft and springy, now felt treacherous.
Embot, I shouted. Stick the light line to my back. If I jump or fall, pull upward with every bit of lift you've got. I'm not powerful enough to carry you.
I don't expect you to. As he complied, I tried to maintain a jog, but the tremors kept knocking me off balance. Chet wasn't faring much better. Ahead of me, a particularly violent quake sent him sprawling, and then a rift opened between us. He glanced toward me with alarm. I jumped. Obligingly, Embot moved upward, pulling the light line taut. While he couldn't lift me completely, his efforts did add to my spring. I'd trained in low G, and this wasn't much different, so I knew how to compensate. I spanned the widening chasm and landed next to Chet.
Marvelous, he said, as I pulled him to his feet.
Together, we charged toward the fragment that was causing all of this. But abruptly, Chet grabbed my arm and hauled me back, halting my run as a hole opened up right in front of us, dirt pouring down like it had liquefied.
Scud!
I glanced to Chet with thanks, and he pointed to the side. We scrambled that direction, rounding the hole, and reached the far edge of the fragment. Here, the ground was bunched up, the earth piled in an enormous furrow.
Get that light line off me and attach it somewhere up above, I shouted to Embot.
He zipped up to the top and attached the line, then returned, trailing the red-orange rope. I looked to Chet, who nodded, grabbing the light line.
Just like climbing to the top of Mount Rigby, he said. Highest point on the fragments.
He glanced at the bunched-up soil.
Only perhaps more squishy.
Less heroic explorer talk, I shouted. More climbing. As if to punctuate my words, a vast section of the ground behind us fell away.
Point taken, Chet said,
then began ascending the high furrow of trembling soil. His feet sank in, making it an obvious struggle. Fortunately, there were chunks of stone to use as footholds. He proved his skill in climbing as he located them. I followed him up, and my lighter weight was an advantage. When I'd been younger, I'd imagined growing to Amazonian heights to become a fierce swordswoman, and then I'd run out of centimeters. Instead,
I'd taken to imagining myself as so small that giants underestimated me, so I could therefore scamper up their backs and stab them in the ears. There weren't many giants to slay, but I got mileage out of my size today as I limberly scrambled up the mound of dirt, barely needing the light line. Then I helped pull Chet out of a mire. It was tough with the dirt sliding around us, but together we managed to reach the top. Embot hovered up from below. Worn out and filthy, the three of us stumbled up to a high point on the new fragment. It looked like a blasted-out landscape, ashen and cracked, but it was solid. The fragment we'd left was in utter turmoil. Little patches of grass peeked through the churning dirt, like sections of unburned skin on the face of a pilot who had died in a crash. Those were quickly vanishing as our current fragment pushed forward. Dirt fell away in vast swaths, with chunks of acclivity stone drifting off to the sides. In minutes, the entire fragment was gone, save for some chunks of dirt stuck to the front where we stood.
"I would not believe this if I hadn't witnessed it firsthand," Chet whispered. "Miss Nightshade, I've never seen such an event."
"Fragments don't often collide?" I asked.
"On occasion, they bump at speed," he said. "But I've never experienced anything more fearsome than a short jolt."
He put his hand to his head.
"It's as if the nowhere itself is trying to kill us."
"Great. Jumping into a dimension literally controlled by beings that hated me might not have been my smartest decision ever. Then again, I had genuinely needed to see that vision at the portal, so yeah, frying pans, fires, all that, as long as there was some warmth and I could roast some rats. "I feel bad about the portal," I said. "Those memories, lost."
"All memories are lost eventually," Chet said. "I agree this is a tragedy, but I prefer to keep my head high."
He dusted off his trousers, shook some dirt from his jacket, then smiled at me.
"Think of it this way. We survived again, and we began the path. I shall count it as a grand victory."
"We need to get farther into pirate territory to get to the next stop, though."
"Indeed," he said, pointing. "That direction."
Our current fragment floated perpendicular to that, so I supposed it could be worse.
"We'd have to cross dozens upon dozens of fragments, however, to reach those ruins on foot."
"So," I said, "time to restart Operation Shipsteel?" He smiled, turning and pointing a slightly different direction.
"The Broadsider home base is perhaps 2 days' travel. I shall need a short time, Miss Nightshade, to use my powers and devise a path forward. We may not be able to go directly. It will depend on the timing of the intersection of the fragments."
"Let's hope," I said, "that no more of them intersect as violently as this one." Chapter 13. While Chet sat to figure out the route, Embot and I went to do a little scouting. This newest fragment was the most normal of the ones I'd been on. No strange grasses, no towering trees, not even dirt, just good, sturdy rock. It was darker than the stone on Detritus and was cracked like it had been through a furnace, but the way it scraped underfoot reminded me of home. We found a small wooden building, but it had been scavenged clean. While I was inside, Embot called to me. I peeked out to see three starfighters shooting past in the sky.
"I think they've come to survey the destroyed fragment," Embot said, hovering beside me.
Made sense. We stayed out of sight, and I had a spike of fear that they'd grab Chet. Unfortunately, I realized I'd misplaced Skullbreaker in the chaos of the exploding fragment. That gave me a surprising sense of loss. The club hadn't been impressive, but it had been special because Chet had helped me make it. As the starfighters wove through the sky, flying away from our fragment and doing a few quick maneuvers, I got a feeling for their skill. Like how you can tell from watching someone's warm-up routine how athletic they are. Those pilots seemed fine, but not terribly skilled. If I could get into a ship, I should have no trouble outflying them in the short term. But how would I get through pirate territory in general? We would need to land and study the next portal in the Path of Elders, and we couldn't do that if pirates were on our tail. When the ships were out of sight, I hurried back to check on Chet. and found that he'd vanished. There was just the large pile of dirt heaped up on the front of the fragment near where the collision had happened. That dirt stirred, and Chet appeared, digging himself out from where he'd apparently hidden himself. He brushed the dirt from his jacket, then spat out a little of it and grinned at me.
Not my most noble of escapes, but better than becoming a floor washer.
How goes the planning? I asked him.
A little more time, if you please.
I wandered a bit farther away, maybe 20 meters, and climbed up a small rock formation near the edge of the fragment. I stood tall, looking into the distance and admiring the view of the various nearby fragments, one of which was streaming water into the void. Hands on my hips, I took a deep breath and couldn't help but grin. Scud. I was loving this. The feeling I'd had the day before, the joy of traveling with Chet, expanded. Now I'd seen firsthand that the quest was useful to me. Exploring a strange frontier, being forced to use some physical prowess for once, running, climbing, jumping, and being chased by monsters. It really did feel as if I'd slipped into one of Grand Grand's stories, where I belonged, where things were right. It was genuinely satisfying to have my life depend on whether I could escape a crumbling fragment, rather than on how well I could imitate an alien on Starsight. I settled down on the rocks. My friends were in trouble. And I did miss them, terribly. What I wouldn't give to be able to share this trip with them. Embot hovered over and I smiled at him. I had at least one friend here. I put my arm around his drone and pointed outward at the fragments. What do you see? I asked him.
Chunks of matter.
I see adventure, I said. I see mysteries and striking beauty. Watch the water shimmer as it falls. Doesn't it look gorgeous?
Somewhat, he admitted. Like little bits twinkling on and off.
That's what emotions are for, I said. Partially. It's not their only purpose, but it's an important one. Do you understand that part?
No, he said. But I'm closer, maybe. I guess I wouldn't know how great mushrooms were without feeling something when I find them, right?
I smiled. I'm glad I'm here with you, Embot. I know you were hesitant about entering, but thank you for being my friend, for joining me. He wobbled in a nod.
But Spencer, I'm still sad.
Why? I asked.
I've spent years upon years worth of processing time, imagining what Commander Spears would be like. Now we've met him and he just calls me an abomination.
He's coming around, I said. The longer he spends with you, the more he'll see that he was wrong. But even if he doesn't, who cares? I'm your pilot now, and I think you're great.
Thanks.
What?
I said thanks. I don't believe that statement requires qualification.
Yeah, but you left it dangling, I said. Something's still bothering you.
You can tell that. How?
Gut feeling?
I don't have guts, Embot said, so I guess you're the expert. But if you need to know, the bigger problem is that I'm still kind of mad at you.
For leaving you behind when I left Starsight? I asked.
Yeah.
I thought you forgave me for that.
I thought I did too, but I keep remembering it.
Is that normal?
It is for humans.
Sometimes it's too easy to forget the things you should remember, and far too easy to remember the things you really should forget.
It's doubly so for me, he said, since I literally can't forget things unless they're deleted, or at least commented out of my code.
I leaned back, putting my hands behind me to support myself as I sat and thought on what he'd said. Scud, he'd given up a lot in all of this. His wonderful ship body, not the least of it. And now, to deal with all these emotions. I'm sorry, I said, for what happened to you on Starsight, Embot. I truly am. It broke my heart to leave you like I did.
But you'd make the same decision again, wouldn't you?
Yes, I said. As much as it pains me to know I hurt you, if I were in that situation again, yes, I'd go save the people of Detritus.
It makes logical sense, he said, but I don't feel it. What do I do to get rid of these feelings? I don't want to be angry, so it's stupid that I'm angry. It makes no sense.
It makes a ton of sense, actually, I said. You don't have many friends, basically just me and Rig. When I left, you were being abandoned by everyone you'd known and loved. It's not the sort of thing you get over easily.
Wow, Embot said. You know emotions really well, Spencer, particularly the stupid ones.
I'll take that as a compliment.
So what do I do?
Weather it, I said. Get better. Learn to accept that sometimes what you feel isn't invalid, but that it doesn't mean you have to act according to those feelings either.
Again, I'm supposed to feel things, but then ignore those feelings. Act opposite of how they direct. Why is that?
I shrugged. It's just life. But sometimes talking about it makes it feel better.
Huh. Yes. I believe that I do feel a little better. Strange. Why is that the case? Nothing has changed.
Because I'm your friend, Embot. And that's what friends do. Share.
And do they also abandon one another to certain death? He said, then hovered down lower. Sorry, it just kind of slipped out. I'll do better.
It's all right, I said, climbing to my